pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. A night of anthology at Anfield last night. Dwayne, what a comeback. One of the biggest comeback in the history of the Champions League. Barcelona, Liverpool. We all thought Liverpool was dead and buried coming into the second half with a deficit of 3 goals and no away goal scored. And then, no Salah, no Firmino. No problem, I guess, Dwayne.
Yeah, I think anyone who said that they saw that coming is lying. I mean, that's the first thing I'll say here.
That's true.
Obviously, there's been some comebacks, and Barcelona has blown leads in the Champions League in recent memory. So, you know, at the world-class level, these teams are all capable when they get this deep into the tournament. And they, if you looked at that first leg and took away the wonder, you know, the wonder kick by Messi, you know, in the final moments of that game, which was one of those, like, take the air out of your lungs moments that you see in this sport sometimes. You take that away. You take away the mystique of the Messi era Barcelona and sort of look at it in isolation, we shouldn't be that surprised that Liverpool could beat them by 3 goals. Because honestly, Liverpool in the overall 180 minutes was the better team. They might have even arguably been outside of allowing goals, which is a big if when you're talking about this sport that doesn't have a lot of goals. But outside of that, they were on equal terms at the very least at the Nou Camp. So it shouldn't be shocking, but at the same time, it is, because it is Barcelona, and there is a mystique to Barcelona. You know, this is not going to help the can Messi do it on a rainy Tuesday night?
At Anfield? On a rainy Tuesday night at Anfield? But you know, this one thing, though, like, people are like, oh, the problem is deep at Barcelona. Like, are you kidding me? They just won La Liga, and they finished like third in the Champions League. Is there a problem there, or there's just more than one good team in the world at any given moment? I think we have to calm our horses here too. There's no problem at Barcelona. You can be beaten and still be a top 2-3 best team in the history of the sports, or right now.
No, I think there's on the whole, over the course of the year, they are in the argument for best team in the world right now. But, you know, on the day yesterday, they weren't good enough. And they played tentatively in the first half. I think they thought that they could just see that game through once Liverpool got the early goal. You know, there was a bit of doubt in there. But then they get through to the half, only, you know, still up 3-1 on the tie, 1-0 down on the day. And they probably assume that they can defend for 45 minutes. But once Liverpool got those bang-bang two quick goals, suddenly it's game on. Absolutely game on. It was game on after one when it was 3-2, let's be honest. But when they got the second one very quickly after, it was certainly game on. Barcelona just needed to score the one goal. You have, you know, 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it, greatest player of all time in your lineup there. You think you could probably pull that off, but it was a case of at that level, it's very difficult to flip that switch back on. I mean, that's maybe a simplistic sort of evaluation of the game, but I think that's what happened. They just couldn't get it back on. And look, there's something wrong with Barcelona. I mean, get your head out of your elbow. Yeah,
there's nothing wrong
with Barcelona. It's just the people are like over. This is modern football in a nutshell. If you think something's wrong with Barcelona, you're overemphasizing the importance. The Champions League is very important. It is the de facto world championship, really.
But, That's true.
But it's not, though. There are other competitions and there are other measures. And the modern game, especially a modern fan, looks at the Champions League as the be-all, end-all. And I do think that that has creeped into the thinking of these big clubs. So they are going to look at their failure to win the Champions League again. And it has been a while now since Barcelona, you know, a while for Barcelona.
Like 4 or 5 years?
Barcelona. for Barcelona in the Messi era. Because before the Messi era, they'd only, you know, they won like a normal team. And then they've won 4 times since he came on board in 06, right?
So that's funny, yeah. I saw a graphic a few weeks ago, Dwayne. There was Messi and Ronaldo. And you had Real Madrid and Barcelona before Messi and Ronaldo era, the amount of trophies. After the Ronaldo and Messi era, and you had like a lot of trophies, like a lot of trophies.
Yeah, this is a remarkable thing we've seen. This will end. There will be a non-Spanish winner for the first time in six seasons this year. This will be the first time someone other than Barcelona or Real Madrid has won in six seasons. Like, this is outrageous, right? We have two English teams left. We have Ajax, the outsider there. You look at the Europa League final with two of the semifinalists both leading. So, you know, it looks like the Europa League final will be two English teams. There's going to be at least one English team in the Champions League final. It is very difficult to say that we have not now tipped over the balance. Maybe the Premier League really is the best league in the world now.
I know,
how can
right?
you argue against it by evidence this year? They have to sustain it for sure, but
You know what it is, though? It is because there's a bit of, I'm going to use the word that you really don't like, Dwayne, the P word. I'm using the P word. There's a bit of parity on top of the Premier League to an extent, and teams are battle tested. I think that's the biggest difference. How many times is Barcelona truly tested in La Liga during a whole season? 4 to 6 games, the two versus Real Madrid, the two versus Atletico, and maybe if you're lucky, the ones against Sevilla or a random game against, I don't know, Getafe on a Tuesday when it's cold, you'll get tested. But most of the games, yeah, you're a head above water, and the water is everyone else.
Yeah, well, it seems like they play El Clasico every other week now between all the cup competitions. But yes, you're right. There is very few. And, you know, Atleti is in there, and they do add a thorn. I'm sure the Espanol, they probably look at those games as not really that challenging, but they at least have to emotionally be prepared for it as the derby games. But yeah, you're right. There's not the same level of natural organic parity that you'll see in the Premier League. Faith parity is not in the Premier League. That's organic, although the wealth plays a role for sure. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. That said, these top teams, yes, I'm a City fan, but I think that outside of the fans, Spurs deserve to win the game against them that they won at the new stadium. So I'm not dismissing that at all. But if you look at the overall last 12 months, I think it's hard to argue that the best two teams in the world aren't City and Liverpool.
No. And yeah, exactly.
One of them looks like they're going to win the Premier League, Brighton aside, on Sunday.
And the other one looks like it's going to
lose the Champions League. The Champions League now.
And, is this really surprising? Look at Liverpool's history. Never won the Premier League. They always came really close. But it could be number 5. So, five Champions Cup,
yeah.
By the way, yeah.
For Liverpool. For sure. I mean, it's a special competition dating back to the European Cup days for them. The irony, of course, is that if you put a gun to the head of, and don't do that, but if you were to put a fake gun to the head of, 100 Liverpool fans and 100 City fans, you'd probably get 75 of the Liverpool fans saying they'd trade the Champions League for the league, and 75 of the City fans saying the opposite.
Trade the league for the Champions League, yeah. Well,
yeah.
You always want what you can't get. And what's been more difficult to get for Manchester City has been the Champions League. And what's been out of reach for Liverpool, it's the Premier League. So it does make sense. But and now looking forward at the continuation of the Champions League, there's another game today, like Dwayne was mentioning, Ajax-Tottenham. Ajax has a 1-goal advantage heading into the second leg at home. Maybe could even be considered favorite, but Tottenham can open the floodgates and maybe score a couple on the road and find themselves with a ticket to the final versus Liverpool.
I think Spurs was very lucky in the first 30 minutes or so of the game at the new White Hart Lane there. I forget what it's called, Tottenham Stadium or something.
I have no idea.
It's White Hart Lane.
Let's call it White Hart Lane.
Yeah, they were lucky to survive that 30-minute onslaught, and I thought they were pretty equal for the rest of the game. So conventional wisdom, if you listen to the European shows, as I do each week, I don't know what I'm going to do with my time in a week and a half. That's my entire commute is listening to European soccer shows. Like, they're all going to go on hiatus for 2 months, and what am I going to do? Listen to music? God, savage.
MLS, there's Premier League, there's going to be some Canadian Premier League. Just listen to Canadian Premier League podcasts, like the two South Dudes Like a Podcast for $2 a month.
Yeah, I produce half of them.
not wrong.
You produce half of them. I'm on half of them.
You're on half of them. I produce like maybe 3/4 of them now. But no, yeah, I agree.
So, yes, where was I? I think they were lucky, but look, The conventional wisdom is that Ajax is the favorite to win the second tie. A lot of people that follow Ajax closely suggest that they played their worst game in the Champions League. Champions League knockout stage anyway, in that first game against Spurs and still got the win. They did absolutely look the better team for long stretches of it. But I wouldn't discount Spurs here. The question I have is, how much of a favorite is Liverpool now in the final? They have to be significant.
It's
Ajax
a big favorite.
Is a difficult team. I think that if you look at Ajax and just look at how they've been playing over the past 3 months, you cannot discount the possibility of them completing the fairy tale. You can't. They've looked amazing. And they've taken down Juve. They've taken down, come on. Like, they have Real Madrid.
The two favorites. They've taken out literally the two favorites of this competition. We all thought, Juventus. They got Ronaldo now. Mr. Champions League. For sure they're going to finally break through from just being a finalist to winning that trophy over the last few years. Nah. Ajax are like, nah. And then they came to Madrid before. So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the idea they can't beat Liverpool in a one-off game is silly. The fact that they can't, finish off a home result against Spurs and then beat Liverpool in a one-off neutral site game, it's silly. It really is. They are absolutely in with a chance right now.
With players that are not fully fit for Liverpool, like, you can win one game without Firmino and Salah and two or three or one in a month's time. That is that important? Who knows? But you're right. It's going to be a great summer final today, too. And we'll know tomorrow morning or later today who's going to face each other on Champions League final.
Well, and quickly, last thought on it. Whatever the final is, it's going to be a fun final to watch because I think that you're going to have an underdog. There's no think about it. You're going to have a real outsider in the final in either Spurs or Ajax. Spurs is an outsider.
Because of
our Premier League focus, we do this. But this is a team that has not won a championship since the 60s, right?
That's true.
Cup and stuff like that. I'm talking about one of the major championships.
Like
and this is absolutely would be a fairy tale for them as well. They're just slightly less of a fairy tale than Ajax, which is ironic since they've won titles more recently. But,
one is like
the modern game right now. They are.
One is like Frozen and one is like Cinderella. One of them is historical, and we all know that that's fairy tale, and we didn't expect it to make a comeback, and it is now. The other one's like Frozen, which is still recent. It's a great Cinderella story, but it's a bit more recent. It doesn't have the same history and the weight of success behind it. It was still very, very, very popular. So also, I guess it does fit.
Yeah, stylistically, too. The other final thought is that stylistically, you're going to play at Liverpool is a front foot, high press team. Two teams that there's going to be goals. I think at the end of the final, it will be an offensive game. It will not be a slow. Mourinho is not trying to bunker Inter to a title here. This should be or Chelsea to a title. This should be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, it'll be a fun time. All right, now, before we look at the games tonight, there's a lot of games tonight. There's games in Major League Soccer and the Canadian Premier League. There's Champions League, of course, this afternoon we talked about. But before we do so, Dwayne, let's talk a little bit about Major League Soccer. The transfer window finished, and I'm just going to play dumb and ask you a question I've asked you pretty much twice a year for the last 5 years. Which window closed? What's that window? What's a TAM? What's a GAM? But more importantly, is this all? Is it going to reopen this season? What happened yesterday?
MLS can be confusing if you don't really pay attention day to day because it does seem like there's always a transfer window open, and there kind of is. Because the roster, there's three different things you have to consider when you're thinking about MLS transactions. The first one that I think overrides everything is your roster freeze deadline. The roster freeze deadline is the last date in which you can add to your roster. That's even sort of a misnomer that itself. It's the last day you can add your roster and have that player eligible for the playoffs. So if you're a baseball fan, you'll be familiar with a similar kind of rule in Major League Baseball. So you can add players for the stretch run, but then they're ineligible for the playoffs and playoff participation. So the roster freeze for MLS is August 30th this year. That means that after September 1st, or August 31st, you cannot add any more players to your roster that can participate in the playoffs. That means that any player that is coming in on a free transfer or any trade or anything like that can be added to your roster at any time during the season. I think that's what confuses people when they talk about the primary and the secondary window, because they think, well, what do you mean we're adding this player through trade? What do you mean we're adding this player from Europe who was on a free? It just means you can't pay a transfer and add them in, right? That's what's happening here. The player's out of contract. If they don't have any current team, they can still be added. So that just because nothing happened yesterday does not mean that something can't happen in the next couple of weeks if that player is not currently playing. Now, that's a big if, because if a player is currently not playing, probably not an impact player you're bringing in, probably a depth piece you're bringing in, right?
And maybe so closer to retirement than it is to actually game shape.
Yeah. So to get into our primary and our secondary window, and what that means is that there's a main window where you've had players before a season and a secondary window where you add players in the season. That's just the distinction. They're reversed in Major League Soccer because Major League Soccer, as we well know, does not play a winter schedule because we're not insane and we can read weather reports. Please don't argue me otherwise. The primary window was open between February 13th to May the 7th, yesterday. That means you cannot pay a transfer to bring a player in now until the secondary window opens. The secondary window opens on July 7th. So really what this means is that you cannot add a player through a transfer from an existing team until July the 7th of this year. On July 7th, you will have 1 month. That secondary window will close on August 7th. All of this, as I said, does not mean you cannot add or change your roster, because you can, because MLS is a trading league. They don't transfer between clubs, so you can trade between clubs. That is allowed. That can still happen. You know, TFC fans that are worried about the back line, they can always, trade Alex Bono if they think that Westbrook's going to be their keeper. They could do that and maybe get another defender in there. They're just not going to bring Omar Gonzalez in because he's in a different league, and they would have to arrange that transfer, and they can't until the secondary window opens. On that note, when the secondary window opens, he'll be on a free transfer, so they can just bring him in and they don't have to pay any extra money for him.
Exactly.
So it might work out in the benefit if they can survive the 2 months, right?
Well, yeah, because so now he's not happy. Okay, so now that Dwayne did a little explanation, a layman's explanation of MLS rules, which, by the way, are way more complicated than you think. When you think you get a grasp of it, guess what? You don't. It's just like the quantum realm.
So they sometimes make them up on the fly.
It changes. Exactly. So when you think you understand, MLS changes the rules. When you think you have the answer, they change the question on you. That's how this league works. But we still love it. But just to go back on Omar Gonzalez and what happened since Monday, since we had Paul Tenorio on the show to talk about the possibility of Omar Gonzalez being transferred to Toronto, Atlas said no. Atlas decided to be like, you know what? No, we're going to keep you. Omar Gonzalez is not happy, and you can always count now on his departure from Atlas in Liga MX. Liga MX had a say in this too, but I think Omar Gonzalez is going to leave Atlas in like July 7th and be in Toronto July 8th.
Well, what complicates that is he's a lone player with them from Diablo. Diablo is okay with letting him go, but Atlas refused to cancel the loan agreement. So that's kind of what happened. Well, it's not kind of, it's literally what happened here. So this is, basically it's just delayed. And I think that TFC, once that failed to go through, has decided that they have enough pieces right now, and they have enough points in the pocket that they can afford to go forward.
Points on the board, or points in the pocket.
Points in the pocket, yeah. And they play tonight to try and make up one of those games at hand. But 2 points per game, they're obviously feel that they're doing okay and that they have enough sort of a head start in the season. Like, I think if TFC had 8 points right now and were below the red line, you might have seen them a little more desperate to add yesterday, but because they're above the red line, they're the top points per game team in the East, which aren't in the pocket yet. They're more on the board. They're still in the air.
And I think, Dwayne, the performance of the young players this year too has given Greg Vanney a bit of insurance. Jordan Hamilton, the fact that he has been influential coming into the pitch, and other players contributing for Toronto FC, I believe give him a bit more depth than they thought they had, so they don't necessarily have to pull the trigger. I think it's the same for Montreal in a way, where we do have a bit of a surprising beginning of the season. We know we're missing either a striker or something, but we never anticipated anything to happen in this window, maybe this summer. But for the impact, it's the money situation. Montreal did not even have the money to sign Emile Legault, who plays for Pacific FC. Montreal was interested. He was on the trial in Montreal. He did really well. They were trying to find a way to get money to pay Auxerre to get his transfer, but they didn't even have it because Montreal's really cap-tied right now, and it's going to be hard to see Montreal do any positive movement without doing a negative one first and freeing up some money. But as we speak, players like Rudy Camacho are eating up parts of this salary cap without even playing a lot. And this is the benefit and the detriment of this league is if you can find a value, a great bargain, and it propels your team further because you have free space and you can have a player that comes in and contributes to the guy who you have in a bargain. But the opposite is real too. If you have a few bad contracts or just one that's big enough to tie your hands together and that guy's not performing, he's got $700,000 not available and you're not finding that bargain and the value isn't there. And you lose a roster spot, and those are becoming quite precious at this moment in a year. So that's what happened with Montreal and the lack of movement in this roster deadline. Omar Brownie comes in a loan situation with a very low salary compared to what's out there and a very high reward situation. It's almost a no-risk situation, so that's why we saw Omar Brownie. But I think Omar Brownie is the transfer window, at least this time around for the Impact.
There's another important sort of quirk to MLS rules that you have to understand here that makes it more beneficial for clubs to sort of wait a couple months to bring a guy in the summer window. I like to call them summer and spring winter because that's a little more less confusing than primary and secondary because they are, as I said, reversed. But the other quirk is that everyone calls it a cap, but it's actually a salary budget. That's very subtle difference in what you're talking about. What it means is you have a total amount of money that averages out to what we call the cap over the course of the year. But if you bring a player in for half of the year on a $700,000 deal, for say, it's only going to cost you $350,000 on your quote unquote cap. So that's
you're right,
a big difference.
The salary that is announced usually is a prorated salary for the entirety of the season. And if you only play a half of it, you're right, you only get half. And there is eventually what we call loan players in the league is going to happen too, where players do get traded or transferred mid-season without having the money or the DP situation being too much of a trouble. Quickly, just a few moves that happened yesterday. David Akam on the move for the second straight year, this time around not from Chicago to Philly, but this time he's going from Philly to Columbus for the Ghanaian midfielder. Another trade that happened, Dwayne Jovan Jones back to Seattle. That's an interesting one. And Xavier Arriaga, a defender, both back with Seattle. Seattle reassuring their back line. We do have another move. Justin Merrim leaving Columbus after just coming back, this time being traded to Atlanta for some GAM and a 2020 Super Draft pick in exchange of Justin Merrim, who is now a Atlanta United player, and the Crew get some TAM and a draft pick. Those are the big moves. Flavio Alvarez, now a member of the Galaxy, a young striker. Those are the big moves you had yesterday, too.
Portland added a DP the day before. Merrim is kind of the more, that's a fit thing, I think. Columbus, I don't know, they have a move in mind probably for the summer that better fits Kyle Porter's style, likely. So that's part of that equation. But when you look at the overall moves yesterday, it's like deadline day madness, no, deadline day tameness. It's the the primary window in MLS is really a secondary window, which is another way it's confusing because you get your major DP moves happening in the summer window because that's the European primary window where the biggest players in the world tend to move. So if you're thinking that your team is going to need a DP, need a big impact player coming in, it will happen in the summer. It always happens in the summer. The biggest names that have come in this league have either come in the summer or were scheduled to come in the summer, and then a negotiation happened and got them there earlier. That's how Jovinko came early.
Yep, and so that's, you're right. And Damali and other players like this from Montreal is the same thing too. They were supposed to be there for a little further, and because the difference like of early May to mid-July is not that much. Some teams, if the team is not in a good situation in Europe or somewhere, if they're like not going to be promoted, if it's not going to really change anything if the player is there or not, sometimes you can get the agreement to be like, okay, he's just going to leave early.
Yeah, and so basically this window is, if a move didn't happen yesterday, it doesn't mean your team's not going to improve. And in fact, because MLS is a playoff league, that's another reason I believe that most of the teams wait until the summer to try and bring guys in. Wayne Rooney last year, famously. And you can completely turn your season around halfway through. Now, whether the new playoff format
That's different.
How people approach this remains to be seen. But
you get one shot at it. You don't have two like with Rainey. Even with Rooney, they didn't go that far in the playoff because they shot their shot just a few weeks before. And they got into the playoff a bit exhausted. But no. I think it's an interesting situation, too, because I think the playoff format does change things. And on a one-off, people will go with what they know before experiences, before experiments, right? So you might see different... The summer window might not be as active as we think it is, too. Or it might be active in a different way. What I thought was interesting yesterday is a lot of the moves were intra-league, too. So I think that's interesting, too, where you have teams looking at what they need and finding what they need in the same league, not always having to go outside and paying exorbitant amount of money to get a player. So I think there's teams that are being a bit more Scrooge with their money and not trying to just fork out the transfers like they used to.
Yeah, no, fair enough. It's complicated, but at the same time, it's, look, as I said, I don't think anyone should panic based on yesterday. Now, that doesn't mean people won't. You know, I've heard some crazy talk amongst the TFC Live crowd, but that's fans are going to fan. So, fan away. But if you want to objectively look at the moves that were made yesterday, sometimes making a move for the sake of a move, which is what I think a lot of fans want at the time, they just want a new toy. They desperately need that new toy. They're in Toys R Us, or I guess Toys R Us doesn't exist for a lot of our listeners anymore. They're in the grocery store or whatever, and they do that thing at the checkout aisle, and they desperately need it, and they think it's going to be the most worthwhile way to spend their allowance money. They only have $10 to spend a week. They spend it on that $10. They play with it for 2 minutes. They find out that it's broken, and they don't have $10 to spend anymore. Sometimes it's better to keep that $10 in your pocket.
Yeah, it's always better. Now, Dwayne, before we say goodbye for today, a lot of games tonight. Atlanta, Toronto, Columbus, LA Galaxy, New York Rebels, Montreal, Chicago, New England. Four games in Major League Soccer. Which one are you watching?
Atlanta, Toronto. Even not just for partisan reasons. Atlanta, Toronto is interesting to me because, of, you know, I think it says, you know, the two last defending MLS Cup champions, both kind of having similar trajectories just a year apart. Is Atlanta going to overcome it faster than Toronto? Can Toronto continue what has been a great start to the first half of their season? To me, that is an intriguing matchup, particularly in Atlanta. Toronto did not play down there last year, so this is an opportunity to go down into a hostile environment for a team that wants to, I think, know whether it's an MLS contending team again or whether it's just taking advantage of a weak East at the start of its season. You know, that there's a lot of questions there. And as I said, can Atlanta continue? They've beaten some bad teams and they beat a beat up team. Can they beat a team that has been playing well this year? There's a lot of stuff that's going to be answered with tonight's game. Although, you know, that said, it's a short week for everyone involved. So who knows?
Yeah. And there's a lot of games in the Canadian Premier League too. Tonight, there is on May 8th, Wednesday, two games in the Canadian Premier League. Forge FC at home at Tim Hortons Field versus Pacific FC, and Noah Verhoeven, the young player of the week versus the player of the week, Cadel Thomas. And if you are interested to know more about the Canadian Premier League player of the week, listen to yesterday's show where Dwayne and I talk about their background and the announcement. And as well, later tonight, 9 p.m. Cavalry FC versus Valor FC at Spruce Meadows. It's going to be a Wednesday night of footy, Dwayne.
Yeah, I'll be in Hamilton watching TFC on my phone a little bit while I'm at the game. So forgive me for the double whammy, but I do have to talk about both games. So don't forgive me that much. It should be a fun night. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it's just nice to have all of these different games to look at and to look forward. I applied today for a Canadian Voyageurs Cup pass for the first game, which will be on the 15th at the Ontario Soccer Centre when the Vaughan Missouri will play Halifax Wanderers. So I'm looking forward to that one as well.
And I'll be next week, Dwayne. I'll be in Blainville to watch RS Blainville take on York 9. Speaking of York 9, tomorrow on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for patrons only, our first Canadian Premier League player joins us to talk about their experience last week. And Cyrus Rawlux joins us tomorrow from York 9 live on the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast, which you can get for $2 a month. Go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork, click the donate button, and you'll get access to 4 shows a month, at least, if not more. But as always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kevlar Ray, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. Until tomorrow, as always, for Dwayne, I'm Kevin, and have a great soccer. I'll do a little take two here. Have a great soccer. Here we go.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.